Welcome back to our continuation of a conversation with Bill Ribbons, Mark Saggers and James Calder. We started off talking about Bill and Mark's book, A Plague on All Our Sports, and there was so much that came out of the conversation that we wanted to bring you back and have a continuation. So thank you and welcome back, all of you.
Thank you very much for inviting us back.
Yeah, we're delighted to be back, Lorna.
Oh, as a broadcaster, we always like repeat business.
Wonderful. Let's get going. I quite often, probably because of the age of my kids, get mired in the issues that have come from, you know, overuse of screens. And I have a number of friends who have teenage, particularly daughters, actually, who haven't been able to go back to school because their anxiety is just too high and they can't handle it. And it's really lovely to know that it's not necessarily across the board, that actually it's had a really, I suppose, warming effect where people can, I suppose people have realised how important socialising is and they just want to get stuck in whatever way they can. And that's brilliant if it's also affected sport positively.
Yeah, I think as well, but it does need a liberal effect. It does need people to understand that we do need to help each other and watch out for each other, which is something that we had lost. And there are still many people that are lost to all of that as well. And but it has to come down now, particularly, again, for making ways that you are able to get people who are perhaps socially deprived of so many things still involved without having to find money that their families just don't have.
When you're talking about the community, there are some amazing community sports developments locally occurring, which are supporting sports and performing arts in the community in very local areas, such as onside youth zones, which I think was started in the northwest and in Manchester, but there's quite a few around London and all over the place. And there's another one opening in Preston. And they really have engaged with the local problems in the local areas to encourage youngsters. And 50p a day gets them in, and they can do everything. They want to play on a smartphone or whatever, they can do that, but it's supervised. But otherwise, it encourages them to do everything from cooking, basketball, right the way through. And they're open 370 days a year. Just, I think it's Christmas Day, I think, is the only one they don't. But there's a lot more of that now that people are aware of now. And I think they've realised the importance of it a lot more than perhaps beforehand. Mm. It's interesting. I remember before COVID, there was a big breakup in society, but hatred about the Brexit vote and who was for Brexit and who was away. And then the world sort of came together a little bit more during the early days of COVID. And then, as you said, Mark, when the social media got in a bit later on and disinformation came out, there's a bit of a social breakdown again. I wonder whether we're going round full circle and maybe we can encourage sport is a very much a unifier, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the pendulum swung so much the other way, we do have to wait until it comes back again. But I do feel that what happened in COVID woke a lot of people up, if I could put it that way, in many ways. Those that mourned, it was difficult. I lost two members of my family during COVID. But there was a sense, really, that, you know, we've got to look at outside, we've got to look at our health. We want to stay here as long as we possibly can. And I completely agree with you that all of these initiatives, people have got off their backsides again.
Yeah, I think, you know, going back to Mark's point about, you know, kind of more localized sport, I think we really did appreciate the social dividend that comes from having healthy local grassroots clubs that kids and adults can go to. And I have to say, I mean, the government through various agencies did do a lot to support and try and maintain these organisations. And I think it was very interesting during COVID because we couldn't go out to start with. And then it was the individual sports that really first came back, wasn't it? It was walking, running, cycling, and then it was golf and some tennis. And it was really the team sports that suffered, I still think to an extent some of the team sports do suffer. You know, locally around me in Northampton, you know, it's a rugby mad area, obviously with the present national champions, and many of the clubs that were putting out four sides on a Saturday afternoon before COVID, you know, are sometimes struggling to get out two or three. So having that long break for the recreational side, you know, it was a long time before rugby came back. And if you were 34, 35 and under a bit of pressure to retire, you know, having that long break, you know, that was enough to just break those bonds and to retire. So I think there are certain team sports at the community level that are still struggling to come back.
Did anyone get that name check that Bill just gave that his side, Northampton, were national champions? Thanks for that, Bill. Being a Bath supporter.
it doesn't happen very often.
I totally ignored it.
That's why you have to shout about it when it does. Do you think, slightly playing devil's advocate, but do you think, particularly Mark, that the media have a role to play? We're talking about social media and obviously the power of the people, but there is definitely a sense that the media is very negative. I feel as though that's not reported enough. I feel as though what comes out of things generally in terms of the media is the negative side. And I just wonder whether the media has a bit of a role to play in terms of sort of acknowledging that readership and clickbait and all this kind of thing are not the only purpose of the media. And actually, there is something that can be done to help people to see the positive sides of these things, like the pandemic.
The media is in crisis. It has no identity. It doesn't particularly want anything more now than to make money. It has, whatever it said, also used the opportunity to not even check half of the work that they do. I'm coming towards an end of a fabulous career, but I learned my trade through the BBC and working with just some great people, but also I had to learn law and other parts of this business. There are now people, very few people, who are serious broadcast journalists in sport any longer. It's much more just pick up your phone, get onto TikTok. And the cynicism, I have to say, of a building where I'm sitting now, and there are others like it, is that the bottom line, once more globally, is just about the finance. And I think that sport will find a way without the negativity, and it will have to be a way from the politicizing and everything else that is going on, and also the lack of real information for many people, and so many stories that are complicit with everything else. And I went to an AI conference at my old school in Cambridge, and the lead speaker just spoke for 25 minutes off the top of his head, one of the brilliant men in this world when it comes to all of this. And he said for many of these things, and he used the post office problems, of course, for all of the sub postmasters. And everything that happened with everybody else in that. He said that one thing that we have to have that we will not get from our platforms, our tablets, and every other part of social media, because we don't know if these are real people or not, is empathy. And if we keep the human empathy, that is the only way things that happen to the post office and happened in sport at times during COVID and other things. Unless we realize that as real humans, our empathy is still important, we will struggle to get forward the next two generations in the right way.
How does that work? That's very interesting. How does that work in conjunction with what you're talking about? You know, what will result in more people working remotely and not working necessarily together in an office or in a club together collaboratively?
But what's happening outside London? I mean, I'm sitting inside the M25 in a building where I've had to listen to the Times and the Sun's news editors talk about the election and what they're doing and what that. There is no thought at the moment, or very little thought, from a lot of people within my industry, of course, messaging so many people around the country and around the world, with nonsense at times and other things to scare them all. There is a fantastic generation out there that does now want to work closer to home, that will use tablets and computers for the right ways, but still might on their Thursday afternoon go and do a bit of waterboarding or go out for a run or just go out and enjoy the fabulous, unbelievable countryside. Now, they're the lucky ones because they're not in the bigger inner cities. But we've got to look at all of that as well and make people realize here that the disinformation can lead you to never get off your butt.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. And I suppose question everything you hear or don't take advice from people that aren't in a position that you'd want to be in.
Or switch off. Switch off. It's very difficult to switch off. But at during COVID, we all switched off in a way when we had to just walk as families and talk again.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we found, Lorna, you know, in that first pandemic lockdown, you know, from March to July 2020, it kind of a division, wasn't it? That there was people that really took the opportunity once we were allowed to get out and enjoy the individual sports that we were allowed to do on empty roads. And yet, you know, as we said in the book, you know, there was people who had that even closer proximity to the hobnobs. And, you know, and just didn't do any exercise at all. So there was this real kind of dichotomy that happened. And we talked earlier about getting people back into sport. And, you know, there are certain groupings that have found it more difficult to get back into sport. I mean, interestingly, female sport has been slower to come back than men's sport for reasons that we don't understand. So we've really got to, going forward as a profession of sport and exercise medicine, we've really got to try and reach out to those people who really find it difficult to be motivated. And if they are going to spend more time at home, as Mark said, to use that time positively when you're not traveling, you know, to take exercise and to understand the benefits it will have to you and indeed to your profession, your work.
Yes, absolutely. I'd really like to ask one particular question that I found interesting about the book in terms of motorsport's adaptation of its capabilities to help with the pandemic. So I am coming at this from, I don't know much about motorsport at all. I have sensory issues with the sound of it, but I was very interested that particular sport was able to use what it has already very quickly to provide something positive, if you like. Would you mind just going into that a little bit and also particularly whether that was recognised in terms of contribution to the pandemic?
I'll talk about that. I mean, we talked in the book and obviously in the media at the time, there's a lot about the COVIDiots within sport and without. But there was some good stories as well. And I found as I was kind of writing the book, it was interesting that actually I had increased admiration for Formula One. You could say with their wealth than they ought to, really. I mean, they had this awful time in Melbourne in March 2020, the Australian GP, which was abandoned. But after that, they got it together. And I think what you're talking about, Laura, is the ability of Mercedes, and helped with a couple of the other groups, was to kind of pivot and use their facilities in Brixworth, only about 10 miles away from where I am at the moment, to with only 100 hours, it was estimated, of work, to suddenly reuse all of their engineers and their machinery to produce CPAP machines, which was recognised probably, and James might have a view about this, was recognised to be better probably than ventilating a lot of people. And under normal circumstances, that would have taken years to redesign, and they made all of their plans freely available for anybody else to copy. And it was a way of an elite sport, yes, with a lot of money, but pivoting and able to kind of use its incredible expertise towards the greater good and health of its citizens. And I thought that was a really welcoming story, and that all came about because some of the Mercedes engineers were having a pint with some of the University College Hospital doctors in Bloomsbury just before we locked down. But, and I think James might know something about it.
Yeah, I mean, there were all sorts of stories along those lines, actually, Bill. There was, James Dyson used his engineers to develop things. And also, actually, just down the road from where you are, Mark, on the South Bank, Lord Rogers, we had huge problems, obviously, with safety equipment and masks and things like that. And Lord Rogers gave a load of plans for masks and stuff with vinyl. And we got the ex-military people in from one of the military charities who just then... they printed, Lord Rogers' team printed out the masks and stuff, and then the military veterans came in and put them all together and then distributed them around the UK. And those stories are amazing. All the different engineers coming, well, we can't do this, so we'll do something else. It's along the lines, it's still the sort of same, we use our practical skills and put them elsewhere. And those were great stories about people coming together and utilising and coming together on it.
Yeah, it's very wartime, isn't it?
Yeah, I think as well at the moment, the other thing that this is quite a pivotal time for sport where we are now, we have the Euros, but with France having an election, with all of the different changes politically around Europe, and with Paris hosting the Olympic Games, we'll find out this summer how far countries have come with the problems that they've had and still have to do with COVID and sport, and whether they've got the release that they need to show us that we're getting back to where we should be.
Yes, that's key really, isn't it? Thank you. I think we're just about approaching the end of our time. I just have one more question coming back to the book again. I'm just interested to know who you are hoping will read it and how you're hoping it's going to impact upon them, particularly linking in with sports medicine physicians.
Yeah, well, I mean, the book's aimed at all followers of sport in this country. And of course, it does deal with medical issues. But I mean, you've been kind enough to read it, Lorna. And it, I mean, we've tried to write it as best we can, not in full medical parlance. So it will be enjoyed. I certainly hope it will be enjoyed by clinicians in sport. And of course, all the many undergraduates who are studying sports science and all the other allied professions to James's and mine. So we hope that it will, you know, kind of resonate throughout many different groups.
I think as well, the COVID Inquiry have got a copy of the book. I think it would be nice to see education establishments decide that it is something that they could possibly use. I think perhaps we won't quite find out how successful this book has been until a generation or two down, whether it's still in book form or something else, that will eventually be very much part of schooling and education as to what happened back in the early 2020s.
Scary to think that it'll be history soon, isn't it?
A bit like us.
Exactly. It all happens far too quickly. Can I ask each of you then, if you have one particular point of learning that you can take away from the whole experience of COVID, what would that be? James, can I start with you?
My take home is that in many situations, I was told, you cannot do that, it's impossible. And my view is that very few things are impossible in this world, other than perhaps Liverpool scoring a goal in the Champions League final against Madrid. But otherwise, things are just very difficult. If it's very difficult, it means it's not impossible. So it was not impossible for me to get patients' relatives visiting dying patients in a hospital ITU. It was not impossible to get sports back, either elite sports and then subsequently recreational sports. And it isn't impossible to open up theatres in central London or in Manchester and get festivals going. It is difficult, very, very difficult. But it's not impossible.
I love that. Thank you very much. Mark, can I go to you next, please?
Sport, fitness, and freedom. We had neither, for some, unable, because of their circumstances, to enjoy what should just be a given right to everybody. But the one thing that I would take away from those 3 years is that professional sport has to be supported, and it has to be supported by real people and people that don't want to manipulate it. And moving forward, we have to keep the dream alive that if you're good at school, at sport, and you're looked after, and you get an opportunity, whatever your background is, go for it.
Wonderful. Wonderfully positive as well. Thank you. And Bill, how about you?
I would endorse both what James and Mark have said. The pandemic brought home to us again the enormous resilience of society and individuals and also the medical professions. I think that doesn't matter how long from a medical point of view you've been working as a doctor or studying, every day is a school day, and there's plenty to be learned. And I think both within medicine and within sport, the importance of a multidisciplinary approach to everything, respecting everybody's opinion and realizing that no man, no coach, no athlete, no doctor is an island. We do really need to work together to solve these problems.
Oh, fantastic. I feel the positivity radiating off all of you. I want to have more of this conversation. And then could I ask whether you feel that the whole COVID experience, lockdown, return to play, all the issues that came up which were never before seen, has made individual sports practitioners feel more concerned about what they're doing, how they're operating, and potentially, therefore, the cover for what they're doing for their practice? Bill, can I direct that one to you, please?
Certainly. I mean, it's part of a trend anyway, but I was acutely aware of the decision-making I was going to have to make at a kind of local club organization point of view, that need to be very careful about the way you consented, because we had to consent our athletes to come back to sport. So I do think it did make me more careful. And we do know that on return to sport generally, and James is more involved in this, you know, the organizations of football doctors, cricket doctors, etc., were coming to people like James's groups and asking, you know, the questions about safety. So I think it has made all of us working in the medical profession even more aware of our responsibilities and our need to be careful in the way that we talk to our patients in our documentation.
Thank you. And the same question to James, but also from an indemnifier's perspective, is there anything that would be helpful for a medical practitioner in respect to that whole position?
And I think it's very difficult. This highlighted the, you know, we've got to work within our area of expertise. I was, you know, working outside of my area of expertise. I'm an orthopedic surgeon and a scientist. You know, I was acutely aware of that, but I was an advisor, if you like, and I was questioned by a chairman who was very upset because I cancelled a Premier League match one weekend. And it, you know, that chairman did ask me whether I was insured because they were considering suing me. That's an uncomfortable situation, and we do not know whether I had government indemnity or Crown indemnity in that position I was in. Certainly, I wouldn't have been covered by my Sempris insurance. But a lot of people did ask the question: you know, are we covered for this? And we need to look very carefully at our medical cover for whether, if we're treating elite athletes, we need to make sure that our medical cover covers the treatment of elite athletes, because they are specific, very, very specific individuals. And I had to change my medical cover because my previous insurers said they don't want to touch it with a barge pole. So I think we need to have a very open and frank conversation with our insurers to identify exactly what they are going to cover. Are they going to cover medicals for different clubs and things like this? So it's a difficult and becoming increasingly difficult.
From a broadcasting perspective, I want the medical profession to keep telling people what they know, how to use what they know, and how to be part an understanding of what the body can and can't do in certain situations. Because I have to say that there are still some good journalists out there, And if the medical profession can work closely with them, we can get to achieve things like progressive rugby is doing with all of the injuries. We can get to achieve the next generation's mental health within sport at whatever level they're playing. And it's necessary and important. And away from a lost broadcasting side of things, which patently is happening in this country, we need expertise. And that can come from those in the medical profession if they give us their full voice.
Yes, exactly that. And I think it's interesting because the upshot of so much of this sounds like it is the paramount importance of communication and collaboration, really.
I think just to finish, Lorna, I think I remember before, just before the pandemic, one of the conservative ministers, I think, said, I think we've heard enough from experts, meaning that, you know, politicians have to make the final decisions, which of course they do. But I do think the importance of expertise in so many different areas was brought home during those difficult years.
I think you're absolutely right. It's the collaboration is the key thing. We, you know, this was not just me. This was a whole team of medical officers. So it was herd responsibility, if you like. You know, if you're going to take me on, although it wouldn't look too good, I assume, if a Premier League chairman sued me for an odd match, I hopefully Saggers would relay that in the press in an appropriate manner.
Of course, I would.
Honestly, myself, you know, I'm trying to do a reasonable job. But I think we've come together, and that's moved forward because the same group of chief medical officers, we've kept this. The meeting goes every single week, and that's gone for concussion now, the UK concussion guidance, and now also following the Manchester Arena inquiry to changes that are for medical provision in so many areas. That the legacy of this COVID has perpetuated those meetings taking place.
And what a positive way to end, really. I think that's absolutely fantastic, and long may it last. Really, I think, bring on the communication and collaboration. Wonderful. Thank you all very much indeed. Could you, before we finish off, please, could you let listeners know where they can find your book and your previous book as well, and how they can ask any questions if they might want to follow up?
From my point of view, I'd be delighted to hear from any of your listeners. They can email me on BillRibbons@BillRibbons.com. If they're interested in a copy of the books, then most books now are sold through Amazon, but you can go on to major booksellers' websites as well and order it.
Add to that for me, join me on X, join me on LinkedIn, just get involved. We have sporting conversations on all sorts of things the whole time. And if there's anything you want to ask me about those incredible times that we had when sport came back without fans and what they did, we're here and we could start a debate anytime you like.
Thank you both. Mark, just to be clear, are you easy to find on X and LinkedIn? What are your handles?
Yeah, the one to get me on is Mark Saggers.
Wonderful. Thank you all very much. This has been absolutely fascinating. I think this, if you're open to it, I'd be really interested to regroup.
We'd be delighted, Lorna.
Of course, love to do that.
Very happy to help.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you've enjoyed it as much as we have. And watch out for further podcasts where we highlight interesting thoughts, issues and questions in the world of sports and exercise medicine with our guest experts. We look forward to seeing you again soon.